in a cold, far away world. Hi, this is Stan Bush, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. Fighting the war for Cybertron, till all are one.
Listening to the All Things Transformers special of War for Cybertron, the book versus the game. Stay tuned. Transformers!
For generations, it has been a peaceful world, until pride and a lust for power divided us. Now we fight enemies who were once our brothers.
Necessary war to return us to glory.
The Autobots will never sacrifice freedom.
The Decepticons will bring this world to order.
Our defeat would mean the end of everything.
My victory will mark a brilliant new beginning.
Hello and welcome to this special episode of All Things Transformers. I am your host, TFG and Mike, and I'm joined with Pecan Court Michael. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. And Spada, how's it going with you, sir?
Good.
We killed Steve Megatron and buried him in the backyard again. So, yeah, he's going to have to come back to life.
Again.
And it was a shallow grave.
He's got a standing grave out there. We just leave it open.
Yeah, it's like, hotel reserve now.
I have a black lantern ring in my top drawer of my dresser. Do you want that?
No, we just use shovels.
Oh, that'll work.
Today we are going to be comparing and dissecting War for Cybertron and Transformers Exodus. Oh man, so how have you guys been? Spada, you can go first.
I've been pretty good, except for my caffeine overdose earlier this week.
You want to elaborate on that?
Let me just put it this way. I drank 2.5 cups of, like, 2.5 actual cups, like a cup of liquid, of super high octane coffee on Monday. I was so jittery, my fingertips were numb.
Ooh. That sounds like fun.
Sounds like NASCAR fuel.
I couldn't tell if I had too much caffeine or was having a heart attack.
Yikes. That's not good, dude.
When I came home, my wife said, "You dumbass."
What have you been up to, Michael?
I had a nice trip to the emergency room.
Oh, yeah. Okay, no, I thought you meant for yourself. Like some, like, oh, great, two injured co-hosts.
No,
lovely.
No, not for me.
Yeah.
Aiden took a spill and split his head open.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we spent a couple hours in the emergency room. Unbeknownst to him, getting stitches. So we just said, we're going to have the doctor look at your head and tell us if you need a Band-Aid. And he said, okay. You know, and we sat there and waited, and then they gave him stitches. And, you know, it was over in about 5 minutes, but it was an awful, awful 5 minutes.
Filled with screaming.
Filled with screaming, yes. Yeah, it was gruesome to watch, to be honest. And wasn't terribly happy with, you know, just making him go through that, but... you know, he had a big gash in his head. You know? I mean, we wouldn't want him to have a huge scar there for the rest of his life. And, I mean, you know,
yeah.
Who wants to grow up like that? Children are cruel. Yeah.
Where was the injury?
On his forehead. He fell. You know, the kids trip and fall about 100 times a day. And I didn't think anything of it at first because... He just ran right past me in the hall, and then he went, thump.
And then there's the blood.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It didn't bleed.
Oh.
It's, you know, he's cut himself before and bled, and it's like, oh, my God, where's all this blood coming from? But, you know, a Band-Aid later, you're fine. This time, he had a big gash in his head that just did not bleed, and it was about an inch wide, up and down, in the middle of his forehead, and we said, well, do you think he's going to need stitches? And Christy's like, take him now. it was really creepy. Yeah, so we just kind of, you know, mopped it up a little bit and took him to the hospital, and I said, my boy fell down and he's got a big cut on his head, can we see a doctor? And they're like, sure.
Do you have insurance?
Of course I do. Yeah, well,
I don't think those training wheels are coming off anytime soon.
Not the rate we're going.
Wait. Where are you going to get training wheels for, you know, walking?
Exactly.
Wait, wasn't he on his bike?
No, he was walking down the hall.
Oh,
running at full speed down the hall, and then he tripped, and his head hit the like the corner where the hall is.
Right. I thought this was you had posted a picture on Facebook or somewhere of him on the bike, and you said something about, we're almost ready to take the training wheels off. And I thought this accident happened on the bike.
No, this is completely separate. Yeah.
Okay.
He was just in the house running. And I mean, we had just woken up, and wow. You know, I mean, I was barely out of my, you know, pajamas and wasn't expecting to go to the emergency room that morning. Exactly.
Yeah. Nope. And this is exactly why there should be no running in the house, and there should be no monkeys jumping on the bed.
That's all right. No more monkeys jumping on the bed.
At least he's not a teenager and walking around while texting.
You know, at that point, it's like, you know, that's your own damn fault. Dumbass.
We had a case here in Baltimore of, apparently these two girls were walking in the Inner Harbor while texting. And they walked straight out into almost 30-mile-an-hour traffic.
Oh, God.
They got hurt. They weren't killed. But they got clipped.
A glancing blow. Yeah. It's like my arm took off their rearview mirror. You know, that kind of hurt. But
like, we were just walking and, like, texting. And, like, then this car came out of nowhere.
You've seen the video. I think it's either Canadian or UK. I think it might be Canadian, but it's a public service announcement where it's literally
that's
girls texting. Yeah, it's girls texting, and they, you know, get in this huge accident, and everybody dies. And it's really graphic.
Well, there's another commercial of, it's just this slow motion picture of a cell phone in a car flying towards the back seat, and then it's something like, in an accident, if you drop your phone, you're not going to be able to call for help, or something like that.
Wow.
Anyway, I thought that this was a Transformers podcast, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And speaking of Transformers, Michael kind of went off on Twitter today. I don't know. Somebody said something about a while ago. I think it was General Techno, who is also a co-host on this show, or Nitro Streak, who was on called in for one of the voicemails. Well, not for this show, for Toycast. Sorry, I'm getting the two confused. I'm not used to.
Yeah.
Well, hold on. I'm getting to it.
Okay.
Said something about there needs to be a Puggleformer version of Toycast, and I was like, okay, we can make an episode out of that. I just need to talk to Callie beforehand. And there's this chick that makes these Puggleformers. They're basically like, I guess they could be considered Transformers Beanie Babies, but she customizes them to character specifics. And I said, well, you know, we would do some sort of little interview with you, and then we would just have you on an episode with a bunch of the other people that you've made these for. I said, however, I'm going to need a sample in hand before we do this. So I picked out Shatterglass Rodimus, and she's already designed it and everything else, and it looks awesome. Oh, wow. And then Michael responded on Twitter, how come I don't have a Puggleformer? And I'm like,
here's mine.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I met her at BotCon, and I said, these are terribly cool, and, you know, I think everybody should have one. You know, and she's like, oh, well, that's great. And a few days later, she opens up for commissions, and 3 minutes later, you know, she's completely swamped. And she's wondering, oh, why are these so popular? What's going on? And I'm thinking, duh, they're terribly cute, and everybody wants one.
I told her she made a
Transformers animated long arm prime Puggleformer, and it is adorable.
It's cute.
Oh
yeah.
My god!
Yeah, they're very cute. They're tiny. They're about the size. Well, I want to say about the size of your fist. If you have a very small fist, might be the size of her fist. She's kind of small.
They're a little bit bigger than a kiwi.
Okay, or a very small fist. Yeah. Yeah. So, but I mean,
okay, I take that back. They're a little bit smaller than a Krispy Kreme donut. I am looking at a comparison picture.
You comparison the weirdest stuff, dude.
Dude, I'm looking at a picture of a Long Arm Prime Puggleformer and a Krispy Kreme donut.
There you go.
Next, I am looking at said picture.
It's been a long time since I've actually seen a Krispy Kreme donut because they closed down the Krispy Kreme by me. But yeah, I could buy that. But yeah, so I told her, I said, you know, quit your job, make 20 of these a day, charge $20 a pop, and
that's
going to
get old real fast.
$400 a day gets old real fast? I don't see how.
Okay, yes, the money would be good, but that...
Making 20 Puggles a day?
Yeah, that...
Well, you know, did you see the Big Bang Theory episode where Penny makes Penny Blossoms? And she's like, hooray, I've got an order for 1,000. And she's like, in 2 days. And she's freaking out because she can only make two at a time. And so she recruits all of her friends to come in, and they sing work song shanties. And you know, they form an assembly line, and they work all night.
Yeah, I think it's in the second season. Yeah, I've got that on DVD. But no, this Rodimus one is just it's so awesome because he has she put on the purple and gray crest. Obviously, it's basically Shatterglass Rodimus's face mold. She's got the goatee on there, and on the back of like
for the actual podcast, right?
Well, yeah, I'm just talking about the picture. That's all I'm talking about. I don't have it in hand yet. And on the back of it, it's got the little, like, his wing from the toy.
Yeah.
And on the side, it has, like, the flame with the Autobots, the Shatterglass Autobot symbol. I thought that was really, really cool, so I can't wait to get that.
It's got little Puggle ears.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
It's a Puggle.
Yeah. So, War for Cybertron, where do we want to start with this?
Why don't we start with similarities?
Okay.
Okay, that was quick. Okay, let's go to the differences. I see similarities in the sense that yes, it has the same characters. They both occur on the same planet. But you know, when you get deeper into like the origin stories of particular characters or how they interact or why they interact, then both take completely different turns.
Yeah, there's a lot of discrepancies between.
They were not made in conjunction with each other.
That's very, very true.
Which is complete opposite to what Aaron Archer said at BotCon.
Well, let's take an example. First, I'd say the biggest discrepancy for me is the entire time in the book, Orion Pax was Optimus's original name.
Right.
And then the council gave him that name. In the game, he's Optimus through
right.
the whole thing.
Right. And then suddenly he's Optimus Prime.
And yeah, exactly. At one point, all of a sudden, the Council, who is nothing more than shadowy versions of the Zeta Prime character, it's like, you are Optimus Prime. It's like, okay, from what you just said, he's always been Optimus Prime. What's going on here?
Yeah, but the circumstances of how he was promoted are different between the book and the game. In the book, he's promoted because it's like, hey, we really like you, and they promote him. In the video game, he's promoted almost like a Battlefield promotion where my leader is dead and I couldn't quite save him. And they're like, well, hey, you're the guy then.
And not only that, in the book, he was promoted because of influence from Alpha Trion, who never shows up in the game.
Right.
And he's only promoted because he demonstrates wisdom and courage, charisma, and all the necessary things to be a leader, as opposed to Megatron. And not to mention Sentinel Prime. Sentinel Prime is in the book. Zeta Prime is in the game.
Right, right.
Completely different.
Now, see, I knew that before I read the book or before mm-hmm. I played the game. So it's like, wait a minute. We're already starting with discrepancies. I mean, I heard that at BotCon, and people were talking about it. Like, wait a minute now. And, the way they talked about it, or the way I should say Aaron Archer talked about it, it's like, okay, we're starting a new continuity with the game. The game is the new continuity, and the book is going to tie in. And it's like, okay, but you have these huge discrepancies where, Starscream is not in charge of an orbital station in the book.
He wasn't in charge of the orbital station in the game. He was in the book.
Oh, in the game he was in charge of the orbital. He said in the game, I've been in charge of this orbital station for 1,000 years. And, it's mine. And the whole point of him being there, the orbital station wasn't even working anymore because it had been nearly destroyed by Dark Energon projects. And it was his role as a scientist to, continue safely, for the most part, not continue or whatever he was doing with the Dark Energon projects. I mean, he was in the know. He knew what was going on.
Let's also talk about Starscream in the fact that in the book, you realized that while he knew about the Decepticons, he was the one who helped plan the capture of Sentinel Prime. He was not evil, but he was taking advantage of an opportunity. Yeah. While in the game, at one point, he was, no, you can't do this. We must protect Cybertron, blah, 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 blah. And within 2 seconds, he went, no, I am now a Decepticon. It's like, where did that come from?
See, in the game, I kind of got the impression that Starscream wasn't so much a good guy. He was an Autobot, which is weird because he's a plane. But, basically, he was working alongside Jetfire. And he suddenly decides that, well, I can't get this Dark Energon to work, but it sounds like Megatron can. So he kind of switches allegiances in order to see what happens.
You're actually mixing stuff up with the game, Michael.
That's what I said. Jetfire, that is the game.
Jetfire was on the Khan side.
Oh, in the book?
In the game.
No, in the game, Jetfire is an Autobot.
He was on the Khan side, and he left them. to join the Autobots.
That's something that's been confusing me, because it never has been really specific in either the book or the game. They just mentioned that he was part of the Decepticons at some point. But they never talk about it in the book or in the game. They never talk about why he left, other than, okay, he thinks Megatron is insane.
Well, okay, yeah, in the game, the game starts off with Jetfire telling Megatron, "You're crazy, back down."
That's within maybe the first half hour of the game.
Well, the first couple episodes, yeah, and then he comes back later when Megatron actually gets to the Dark Energy, when he meets Starscream for the first time, and Jetfire is there, and Jetfire says, you know, you can't have the Dark Energon, and Starscream says, "I'm defecting, I'll be a Decepticon now, and I will give it to you." And Jetfire says, "Starscream, you're a traitor," and he flies off. So Jetfire's an Autobot. And then, later on in the game, Jetfire shows up and says to Optimus Prime, you know, "What's going on?" And Optimus says, you know, "I'm taking battlefield command now." And, you know, Jetfire's like, "Oh, it's sad to see that Zeta's gone." And, you know, they make every impression that Jetfire is an Autobot and always has been an Autobot. Or that
he leads the
aerial bots. Because you have all these nameless aerial bots, and Jetfire is, in, you know, as far as I can tell, in charge of them.
Well, actually, I think Air Raid was actually in charge of them at one point. That's just...
They introduced Air Raid, but then you know, they don't really say that he. I don't see him as a leader. All he does is get captured.
They mention, I'm not sure if it was Air Raid or in the game in the flight chapter. I think it was chapter 9, because I played as Air Raid and then I played as Silverbolt. And Air Raid makes a snide comment to Silverbolt. "Oh, I guess that's why you know." Why would they choose you as the leader of the aerial bots, Silverbolt, seeing as how you're afraid of flying or you're afraid of heights or whatever? So in the game, Silverbolt is the leader of the aerial bots.
Well, you can choose who the leader was, couldn't you, in the game?
I don't think so. I think no matter which character you play as of the three that you're given,
Silverbolt is the leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. they use the same dialogue.
Okay.
So the dialogue is going to run no matter what. That's why you can only choose three characters, because all the dialogue pertains to those three characters. It doesn't matter which one it is. I mean, even if you're playing as Megatron, Megatron will say, "Throw the switch," you know, and then nobody throws the switch, and it's like, "Oh, okay, I'll do it." You know, or I guess if you're playing as like Brawl and Megatron says, you know, "Throw the switch," then it's like, "Okay, I'll go do it," you know. But if you're playing as Megatron, it gets a little confusing because you're expecting someone else to follow your command, right?
"Throw the switch. Press A." "I command you to throw the switch. Press A."
Yeah, well, you know, there were certain times where, like when you're fighting Omega Supreme, and I think it's Breakdown. Breakdown says, "Oh, look, it's his Energon thing popping up out of the ground. What do we do?" And Megatron goes, "Infect it with Dark Energon." And I'm like, "Okay, Starscream, go take care of that, you know?" It occurs to me, if I don't do it, it's not going to happen.
Yep.
So at that point, I was kind of happy I was playing as Breakdown, because I could very quickly tear across the battlefield. Whereas, you know, Megatron would poke all the way across there.
Yeah, I was playing as Megatron in that fight. That was a struggle to get to that Energon tank.
Yeah.
When you were playing as Megatron, because even with holding down the accelerator button,
he's slow.
He is slow.
He's pokey. Yeah. So no, I played as Breakdown. I just tore across it, and then once I actually infected it, then two steps away, there's this console that pops up, and that releases a giant gun. And then you pick up the giant gun and just kind of walk around with it. And, you know, if you're Breakdown, then that means your two more powerful characters with bigger guns are indestructible. Because if you've noticed, you know, your two sidekicks never die.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not. I mean, I'm assuming if you're playing multiplayer or co-op mode, they can die. But if you're just playing by yourself and your two sidekicks are computer-driven, nothing bad ever happens to them.
Well, what did you guys think of the AI?
I thought it was done really well.
I thought the companion AI was good.
I was going to say that. I spent a goodly chunk of the game following my companions because I wasn't sure where to go. It's like, well, where are they? It's like I'm lost. What do I do now? And they would tear off in another direction, and I would just follow them. And next thing you know, the counter would pop up and tell me, you know, how close I am to my next objective.
Yeah.
Enemy AI, not so much.
Enemy AI was pretty stupid at times.
I hate those other jets. On the Autobot campaign, those Decepticon jets that kind of remind me of TIE fighters.
Yeah,
because they kind of do that barrel roll side to side, and I'm like, why the hell am I fighting TIE fighters in a Transformers game?
That's something that really threw me about the game. Is there were some things that they did really, really, really well. Character models, the overall feel of the game. The Autobot campaign, I thought, was definitely superior to the Decepticon campaign. But then they did some really weird things, like TIE fighters on the Decepticon side. And the last mission of the game one of the last missions of the game is a flight sequence that was way too easy.
Hmm. That was where I had to follow the computer AI.
That, and I think that's because of the Unreal 3 engine being, hey, brown is the default color here.
Yeah, no, the enemy AI, in a lot of cases, I thought, you know, they would just stand still. They would come out and they would fire and stand there, and especially if I've got the sniper rifle, I'm just picking them off, boom, 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 boom. And you know, they're not putting up much of a fight.
Did you guys run out of ammo really quickly?
Oh yeah. It was easier just to switch weapons than to find new ammo.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The only part of the enemy AI that I have a problem with, and I'm still having a problem with because I haven't actually finished the game. I'm in the Trepticon battle. I can get to the third segment of that where you have to clip his dorsal fin. And they call it a dorsal fin. I'm thinking this thing is not a friggin' dolphin. But my problem with that is when the little friggin' Energon spiders, the dark Energon spiders, come out. And I'm like, well, I'm trying to shoot this thing, yet these spiders are nipping at my legs. And yet I have to bring my axe out because I've played the battle as Optimus. I have to bring my melee axe out and kill these damn things. And then all of a sudden I die. I'm like, oh, crap.
Well, it's easy enough to kill off the little spider things. That's not a big deal. Mm. They're distractions, if anything.
Yeah.
It's not easy when you're playing on the hardest difficulty, because there are like two or three times more spiders, and the time between the spiders and when he starts shooting you again is like seconds.
See, I'm playing on medium difficulty, and I was wondering, like, if more bad guys came out on hard, because you'll basically have a wave of bad guys come at you, and you have to defeat them all before you can, you know, see the next cutscene, basically, and you know, I just keep killing people until I'm done. But I'm thinking this wasn't that bad. I mean, is there twice as many bad guys on hard, or not?
Now you see, I only played the boss levels on hard, like Omega Supreme and Trypticon on hard. I didn't go back and actually play the other stuff on hard.
I don't know. I didn't so much have any trouble with boss battles. The problems I had was, you know, basically just stupid mistakes. Like, there's I want to say an episode where you're escaping Kaon, and you're driving across like this honeycomb floor, and huge hexagons, you know, or of it just disappear.
Oh, yeah.
And I kept driving into the hole every – I mean, I probably drove into the hole about 5 or 6 times.
Well, what I did was I would wait a second or two and then start driving. And that right. seems to – for me, at least, it seemed to do something. It seemed to help
make well, it a little finally, easier. It occurred to me that I'm not really in a hurry. They're like, go, 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 go. And actually, if you stop and defeat the bad guys, then you can just kind of tiptoe in between the holes.
Right.
And that's what I did. And after that, it was a piece of cake. But while I thought there was some sense of urgency, and I'm just tearing through there, and every time I fell in the hole. And that
well,
kind of
in the Decepticon campaign, there was senses of urgency as well at times. And you never really had to run or really speed over anywhere.
Now, I mean, I would like to believe that sometimes it helped, you know, as far as if you're in vehicle mode and you have to jump over a chasm or something, you know, maybe that would be helpful. But for the most part, no, not really. And it also occurred to me that if I go slowly, especially it's like Starscream, right? If I go slowly, my partners will zip up ahead and show me the way.
Right.
Yeah, so I have absolutely no reason to go fast.
Did you find when you were in the aerial battles that you could either go really slowly or really fast, but you couldn't match the speed of your AI companions?
Yeah.
I didn't even try. Honestly, I just went slowly. At that point, I wanted to look around and see what was around me. Yeah. I kept finding the hidden, you know, Decepticon or Autobot insignias. And I was like, wow, they hide them pretty well. So after a while, I'm just going really slowly and looking around at all the nooks and crannies and trying to find hidden, you know, weapon stashes.
I had a really hard time finding some of those things.
I wasn't even really looking for them. what did you guys think of, especially with the more the vehicles than the actual jets? What did you think of all the vehicles being hover, and then of course when you hit the accelerator button, it goes to the floor?
I like that. I thought that was a nice touch.
It's really the best thing they could have done, because I'll be honest, I didn't transform all that much unless I was a flyer. I really right. didn't, unless I was either a tank or a flyer. Because there really wasn't a point.
Well, occasionally you'd have to get from one end of the room to the other very quickly. Like during the Omega Supreme
yeah,
battle.
Occasionally.
Like, yeah, then I could see it. But for the most part, the speeds were different. I mean, honestly, once you're Megatron, you're going to be plotting ahead in robot mode just as quickly as you're going to plot ahead in vehicle mode.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I could see the transform is if I ran out of ammo, because my tank mode still had ammo.
Yeah.
Yep.
Same.
But other than that, really, there's really no reason to transform.
Now, at Comic-Con, I believe the folks from High Moon Studios and Activision said they were aware of the ammo problem, and it's going to be fixed in a patch.
That's all well and good for the PlayStation and,
360, yeah.
Exactly. Those guys. For people who play on the PC, as far as I can tell, there won't be any patches or anything. I mean, this isn't fed through Steam or anything.
Yeah.
And from what
I see, that's the thing. When I got the game, sorry to interrupt you, but when I got the game, I just got it to play through the story and see the cutscenes, honestly. I mean, yeah, I like the gameplay and everything else, and I like being able to fight as the different Transformers and stuff like that, but, I mean, when I got it for the PC, I'm like, okay, I'm getting this for the single-player story campaigns to see what happens.
Right.
I really, for the PC, let's be honest, this is a very poor PC port. at least it's not as bad as Grand Theft Auto 4, where they, when you go to change your control configuration, it shows you an Xbox 360 controller instead of computer controls.
Oh, I hate that. Yeah.
I know. but overall, I really enjoyed playing the game. I don't really have – I kind of wish that they would have figured out a way to have the character on the right side of the screen instead of the left, but I've gotten used to it, so it's okay.
Mm. Do you I don't know how they're going to do a sequel. I hope this game sells. I really do. And I think it is selling. But I don't know how they're going to do a sequel, if they even can.
I'm not even sure if they... I mean, I know that they would probably want to. The only other thing that I can think that they would do, just going off of the game continuity and the book continuity, is that they set it on Earth.
Right. For Prime.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only thing they can do.
And for those listening, I mean the series Transformers Prime.
Yeah, Transformers Prime. Yeah. I know Spade has read the book, and I've read the book. Michael, have you read the book, or do you have it?
I do not. I did read the Wikipedia entry, which is basically the book, sadly.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No, it's got the whole story there.
You
got the story and how the story compares to the comics and how the story compares to the game and references, notes, all sorts of things. It's pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, my thing with the comparison between the book and the game, to me, if you take out the whole, you know, the comparisons between the two, basically the book is a more extensive story, and the game pretty much takes all the exposition out. 'Cause it's like, in the book you have at least... I forget what chapter it is. There's a chapter after the war starts in the book where Alpha Trion is like 5 or 6 pages. Alpha Trion is just telling you about all these battles that are happening.
That was
and I was
rough.
Like, oh, can this like go by already? Stop, you know, put the damn quill down and just
I will admit that was the hardest part of the book to read. And that was maybe at the halfway point, would you say?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where the game starts, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, because all, you know, like you were saying earlier, Michael, about, you know, Optimus being called Orion Pax in the book, like the first 5 or 6, maybe 7 chapters are all about Orion Pax and Alpha Trion and him being a data clerk and him wanting to learn about Megatron or... You know, Megatronus, as it's called in the book, which that is the worst fucking name for a Transformer I ever.
I pronounce it Megatronus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to Latinize
Expectus Megatronus.
Yeah, it's the stupidest name I've ever heard for a Transformer.
Well, apparently it's the original name of the Fallen.
Ooh. Yeah.
It sounded much cooler when Aaron Archer was explaining it and showing us the pictures of what they look like.
Seriously, did he actually... They showed pictures of what the 13 are going to look like?
They did, yeah. Apparently, well, probably about half of the 13.
So it's what? Liege Maximo, Alpha Trion, Megatronus, Prima, and I know there was a fifth one, but I can't remember.
Me neither, yeah. No, they showed the Fallen. And they made it very obvious. They want to beat you over the head with it. It says Megatronus, and then they X'd it out, and below that put the Fallen. And then it looked like Megatronus, except he was black and on fire.
Oh.
Yeah.
So did he more resemble the movie The Fallen or The Fallen from the game?
The game.
I'm sorry, the comic.
You know what? Megatronus, Expecto Patronus, looked...
Potatomus?
Exactly. He looked a lot like Megatron from the movie. You know, he looked like somebody just kind of made a stick man out of tinfoil and crumpled him up. Really? But The Fallen kind of looked like Megatronus, except he was on fire, if that makes sense. So you take movie Megatron and you kind of paint him black and put him on fire, and that would be The Fallen.
Was it like red fire or purple fire?
I seem to remember it being red.
Okay.
So it's basically like the burning Fallen toy that we got a little while ago.
Well, no, it didn't look like The Fallen at all.
Okay.
It looks like Megatron.
No, I mean as far as the colors. It was like the burning Fallen figure in the Revenge of the Fallen line.
No, not really. I would kind of compare it more to the War Within Fallen.
Oh, okay.
So
no,
what
I mean,
about...
I didn't look at it and go, "Whoa, this is crap." But the cool thing was that they didn't. I want to say they didn't do the art in house. They went to certain comic companies and said, "This is a character we want to portray. Why don't you have an artist make work it up for us?" And so each one was slightly different depending on who the artist was, but they all looked really, really nice. I mean, this wasn't normal just box art type stuff. This was like something that you'd want on a poster.
Ooh.
It was really nice.
I really wish they probably haven't finalized any of that stuff yet, so that's probably why they can't like release it to the public.
Right.
But I would love.
You know what I'd love to have a poster of?
What?
Michael's like, oh, great, here we go. Yeah. No, I would love to have a poster of the book cover.
Really?
Yes.
I wasn't terribly impressed with the book cover.
It's because you haven't held it up close and personal. It is embossed on the symbols.
No, I've seen it. I just, I was like, oh, okay, whatever.
It looks really good.
Yeah?
Yeah, it does.
I don't know. Like I said, I saw it in the store, and I was like, yeah, I'll wait for the $6 soft cover. Or better yet, I'll read the wiki page, which pretty much tells me the whole damn story. So it's just like 5 pages of wiki.
Literally. Somebody, and I know Michael commented on Facebook about the video, that I did an update video after I read the book, and somebody commented on, I think they commented on my YouTube channel that, oh wow, the book really reminds me of the TFGM podcast logo. I was like, exactly, that's exactly why I wanted to get it, besides the fact of the story. But going into the book a bit, in animated, Sentinel Prime was a douchebag. He was meant to be a character you love to hate. In the book, he's a badass.
Well, he doesn't start off as one.
Well, what I mean by he's a badass is that when he, like, after Starscream lets him go, and of course, spoilers for those who haven't read it, but you know. Michael probably won't read it until 6 months from now. But anyway, when Starscream lets him go and he's like hiding in the tunnels and whatever, and Megatron's down there looking for him or whatever, he's just in the shadows and he calls Megatron Upstart. And he keeps calling him Upstart. And I'm thinking, wow, you got some brass balls, Sentinel.
Well, not only that, he went from this kind of an arrogant prick. And then he realizes the error of his ways. I think he literally says, "Time and quiet are a warrior's best friend," or something like that.
Yeah.
And he completely like changes his tune. And then the fight sequence between Sentinel and Megatron is honestly epic. In the book, it is epic. In the game. The Zeta fight was probably the most contrived and stupid video game boss fight I've played in a long time.
And in the book, I don't know what they've got. I forget what it is in the game, but in the book they have, what is it, the code key of power and the code key of
justice. Oh, what's
the code key of justice. And the code key of power, I believe, is within Sentinel Prime. Wow.
What? All right. Having not read the book and not having read that in the wiki, I'm completely lost, but it sounds kind of bad.
Basically, think of the code keys as...
The keymaster and the gatekeeper.
Yeah, well, okay, well, yeah, if you want to do the Ghostbusters reference, but I was going to say two halves of the Matrix of Leadership, even though that's not what they are, but, like... Sentinel had it inside him, like Optimus has the Matrix inside him type of deal.
Yeah.
And so, that was very, very cool.
And they ripped it out of him.
Yeah, it literally rips it out of him, which is pretty freaking hardcore. And the funny thing was, Sentinel was still alive after it.
Yep.
But they don't do it. They don't shoot missiles at each other. They don't do the transformation. They do it old school with swords.
Yep. There's a lot of nods.
I just found it.
And then the ensuing battle between Megatron and Starscream, I thought was really good in the book, which never ever happened in the game, and I really, really think the game should have had something.
Yeah.
Right.
There is a ton of nods in the book other continuities. You got Ultra Magnus leading the Wreckers.
Mm-hmm. With a hammer.
With the hammer. Minicons are mentioned, and the distrust that regular Transformers have of Minicons.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I know they talked about the Minicons, and in fact, in the game, I want to say that the tape cassettes are considered Minicons.
You're correct.
They are.
That was a great battle, by the way, the Soundwave battle.
The Soundwave battle was awesome.
Yeah.
For the simple fact that
Rumble's movie
line is so out of place, but it's cool that they put it in there.
Yes, that
should crack the shell.
Then we crack the egg.
Yeah. Did you guys notice when they're going through K-On before you get to the Soundwave battle? When they first
the mockery of justice.
Yeah.
Spare me this mockery of justice. So, shut up!
I laughed so hard. Because doesn't it start with guilty or innocent, and then it goes, spare me this mockery of justice?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Oh god, I laughed so hard.
Actually, I was playing it, and I kind of did like a fanboy, hee hee hee.
Talk about a fan wank.
And you know what? When that happened, I spun the camera around. I'm like, where is that coming from? Where is that coming from?
I wanted to go back and play that again because I didn't realize you could spin the camera. I thought it was a cutscene. So I was like, oh, man, I got to play this again. I'll probably play the whole game again as different characters. But
I played it as mostly Prime and Megatron. I would love to go back and play it as like a scout. Or something.
Yeah, no, Breakdown's a lot of fun. Soundwave's a lot of fun.
There needed to be more flying sections. I really wanted another flying section for each. Because on the Decepticon side, you only got one time where Starscream and company were actually in a big open area flying around.
Right.
Yeah. In that section, I played as Skywarp. I couldn't bring myself to use Starscream.
Starscream says, you must think I'm as dumb as Skywarp. And Skywarp says, I'll show you dumb, Starscream. And Starscream says, you always do. I said, you know, they have these characters nailed. This is awesome.
Oh yeah.
You know, the only thing I didn't like about the Seekers, I hated Starscream's voice.
That's what I was going to just ask. What did you guys think of the voice acting in the game?
For the most part, I liked it, but I didn't like Starscream's voice, and I did not care for Ironhide's voice. And what is with Ratchet now becoming, like, British?
That's what he sounded like in the movie.
I know. But that's kind of stupid.
I'll take that. I mean, over you know, crotchety old guy. Ratchet.
Good.
Yeah. I'll take British Ratchet. I didn't think Ironhide was bad. You know who I thought was awesome was Warpath.
Yeah.
And the band.
Yeah, he was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool.
Blam!
Yeah, kapow! He's like, I'm going to open up a whole can of kapow!
I think now, my biggest disappointment for the voices, though, was Soundwave. Now, let me explain. I'm glad they had the vocoder effect in there, but for the life of me, I couldn't understand what he was saying. It must be my TV, or maybe it was the way the audio was coming out of the PS3, but I could not understand anything he was saying. I could, like, he would start talking, and I'd be with him, and then... like, after a word or two, nothing. I couldn't understand anything.
Now, I understood what he said. It was tough sometimes, though. It wasn't as tough as, say, like, Stephen Hawking, you know. But it wasn't that awful. I liked it. I like that they used the vocoder. I liked it was just very G1 for me, especially when you saw him transformed into boombox mode.
In the boombox mode, yeah.
In the battle, he transforms. He's kind of standing in front of Zeta Prime, and he lets out the sonic booms or whatever, and you know he's still letting out the sonic attacks as you're fighting the tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wish to hell, and I know this is never going to happen, but I wish to hell they would have made the toy a triple changer. The tape deck mode from the game design. Mm-hmm. That would have been so freaking awesome.
If anything, they might release a second one that's a tape deck where the tapes actually come out.
Well, what really, really sucks is they said at San Diego Comic-Con, these are all the figures we're getting for right now. The ones that have been announced. And they have a lot more figures they could make.
Oh, yeah.
You know. I don't care if you disagree with me or not when I say this, but I'm sorry. You know the fangirl rage especially for Scream and Skywarp. You know they're going to make a Starscream, Skywarp, and Thundercracker, whether they make it as three packs or individual figures, you know they're going to make those.
I just pray that they don't make them BotCon exclusives for next year.
I was just going to say that. You're gonna find one Starscream on the shelves, and then the next year they're going to repaint him as Skywarp.
I mean, we are now. It's been, what was it, BotCon 2007 that they released Thundercracker, Dirge, and Thrust.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's 3 years later that we are now just starting to get those figures after Dirge.
I feel cheated.
All we need is Thundercracker.
I feel cheated. After having after going to BotCon and getting those figures, now it's like, wait a minute, they're gonna, you know, how many years later they're gonna come out with the same figure? That's kind of crappy.
Well, the Thrust figure is actually different. It is legitimately different.
No, he's got snap-on hydrofoils or whatever.
Yeah, I'm actually, I've got him sitting right next to me, actually. And it's a great figure. I mean, it is a legitimately, I think that the Thrust figure is actually better than all the other Seekers.
Really?
Yeah, the paint job.
I haven't transformed mine yet. I've just got him sitting on my desk.
The paint job is amazing, and I love the paint job, and I love the way that the wings look. Unfortunately, he is a little top heavy, but otherwise, he looks great. And I've got him connected to a Tamiya action stand, and just have him like displayed in the air, just pointing his guns in different directions, and it looks great.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, there was someone on YouTube that I subscribed to. I think it was Night/20 or Night/22. I don't know. He does video reviews. He does like little vlogs about his thoughts on Transformers, and he did one on War for Cybertron. And he mentions that he, all due respect to Colin, he thinks that they should have got somebody else to voice Prime in the game. What do you guys think? Does Cullen's, Prime voice fit the character in the game?
I was going to bring this up. I think they're spreading Cullen a little thin. I mean, I love Peter Cullen. I love him to death. He will always be Optimus Prime. But there's something. It's weird. In the movies and in the game, there's something missing. There's this sense of whimsy from his voice that is just missing. I can't really explain it, but if you go back and watch season one of or G1, he has this tone in his voice back then that he's missing now.
And it's called 25 years of living.
Well, I mean, besides that, I mean, the mannerism of the voice is significantly different.
I think partially that's going to be up to, the voice director.
Yeah.
And how they want him to sound. I mean, now he's more you know, I mean, well, one thing I would mention is that the although they sound alike, because you know he's only got one Optimus voice now, the Optimus from the game is not the give me your face Optimus from the movie.
No, it isn't. You are correct.
You know, they're just written completely different. You know, and you know, Cullen, you know, just downright swears, "Oh no, you know, I'm keeping it real. This is the same Prime, and he stands for dignity and truth and justice. And give me your face." You know, somebody actually stood up and asked him in a panel, "What do you think of give me your face, Optimus?" And he said, "I think it would hurt my face." You know. But yeah. But he said no, this is the same Optimus. There's nothing different here. This is the same guy, and I beg to differ. And I think, you know, judging from the crowd and the murmurs from the crowd, I think a lot of people would beg to differ. Right?
The other thing
is G1 Optimus, as far as I can tell.
It's as close as he's going to get, I think, right, at this point.
Right.
What I would have liked to have heard is the same thing they did in the game. You have one, let's say you get David Kaye to play the voice for Orion Pax or plain old Optimus. And he can come close to Optimus, but he's not the gravitas, you know, that you get from Cullen. And then when he's granted the Matrix of Leadership, or he's, you know, given the name Prime, at that point, bring in Cullen. And now he's upgraded. He's the Prime.
That was also something that kind of irritated me. You had, from all we've known, and it was proven in the – it was shown in the original movie, in the 1986 movie. Once you get that Matrix, you change. Not just your voice, but physically, you change. They did it in the Dreamwave comics. They talked about it in the original comics. When Thunderwing corrupted the Matrix, he physically changed.
Right.
It's something that physically changes, and you didn't get that in the game. And even in the book, like, you got a sense when he got that when he got the Matrix, he changed something inside him. They made a point to say inside he is a different person now.
And I think the game falters at the point of, well, I understand the whole point is you have to call him. And see, I don't know. A lot of people, whether they're Transformers fans or not, should know that Optimus used to be Orion Pax. I mean, you can go to Wikipedia and look it up.
Know that unless you're a fan of the 1984 cartoon.
Well,
that's something that really isn't – we consider it canon and we consider it common knowledge. But that hasn't been something that's been really put out there.
Well, I'm surprised that the game designers, seeing as how Matt Teager has said specifically, I'm a big Transformers fan. Everybody that works in the game has been a huge Transformers fan, and we wanted to make a game not only for regular people, but also for the fans and this, that, and the other thing, and everything else.
If you start like looking, just you know this, Hasbro had its hand in a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah,
of course.
You look at the book. Specifically, that whole like three paragraphs of and we launched the AllSpark, which has never been mentioned before, into space, and Bumblebee now can't talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where the hell did that come from?
Exactly.
That's my favorite part is Bumblebee talking in the game. Well, maybe not Bumblebee, but no, it's the interaction of the characters as they're going through their chapter, whichever
and
three characters
in
it
the
is.
Game. Bumblebee's voice. Was the most perfect Bumblebee voice we've had in years.
Yeah.
And guess what? Geekcast Radio Network will be talking to Bumblebee at the end of August. I have sent a request to interview Johnny Young Bosch, who is also Adam Park, the Black Ranger from Power Rangers.
I'm sure you know I'm a huge Sentai fan.
Well, that's good news. That'll be interesting to hear.
Yeah, that was – I mean, honestly, he is now the voice of Bumblebee for me. He really is.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really tired of this Bumblebee has no voice, or he's this – okay, it made sense in the first movie. I was fine with that in the first movie. In the second movie – okay, it's getting old. They better have something in the third movie.
And that's the other thing. You know that they're paying Mr. Mark Ryan a percentage of some sort of fee to have his name attached to saying that he is the voice actor of Bumblebee. And I'm thinking, okay, how the hell is he the voice actor of Bumblebee unless he lets out like a little meep or some sort of noise effect?
Two lines. Yeah.
I know. Exactly.
And looking, it's not exactly a voice.
And listening back to the original movie when he says, "Sir, I'd like to go with the boy." That was a line from Oliver, I think. Like, the musical.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen that.
I don't know either, but I'm not really sure. But I do agree with you, Spada. Johnny Young Bosch did an awesome job. And he's not even really doing a different – it's his voice. I mean, it's – I mean, I guess if you really
– He is obviously adding inflections here and there. And
yeah.
But it's a perfect voice for Bumblebee, I think.
Yep.
No, it's nice. I enjoyed it. But again, I think there's a certain amount to be said for the way the characters interact. It's the writing. There's just very well-written stuff there.
Yeah, in both really the book and in the game.
Yeah, and you guys were saying that you know that Hasbro had a hand in the book and the game, and obviously, I mean, Hasbro just basically contracted Alex Irvine out. I mean, I'm betting that Aaron Archer had an entire treatment filled out and said, here, just, you know, put in little things here and there and there. I'm pretty much betting that Irvine had nothing to do with the book other than putting his name on it.
I wouldn't go that far.
I wouldn't go that far. I'm sure he did write it, but I'm sure he would write, okay, I'm sure there was an outline that he needed to follow. And they said, well, this is how we want to go. This is what we need. Like you said, there was a treatment. And I bet you this was maybe the third or fourth or fifth.
Right. And there's a goodly chunk of contradiction there. Yeah. Just all over the place as far as, you know, different characters. At one point, you know, they say, oh, Starscream's a scientist. And then another point they go, no, he's not a scientist. Or... you know, certain things that just don't make sense where that could be attributed to, you know, they just missed it in the draft.
Yeah, yeah. One of the biggest things in the book that I just absolutely had it just went all fanboy on was when they were talking about building the Ark and the fact that Alpha Trion was going to help build the Ark. So technically, Transformers now has Noah.
Yeah, I was actually talking to my wife about that, and she's like, she turned to me and she said, "So wait, are they going to have two of every bot or something?"
That would make sense. Yeah.
One male, one female. One male, one female.
Two of the Ark.
Yes, but the other thing that I really went all fanboy over when they started mentioning Project Generation 1. I just kept laughing and just like grinning from ear to ear.
I was laughing like, for a different reason, but I was laughing because I was like, oh God, they went there. Oh God. So wait a minute. I have a question. What's Generation 2? And is that stupid mother effing cube involved?
Dude, you can curse on this show. We don't care.
It's the cosmic cube.
I don't know how anybody grew up watching G1 episodes inside the cybernetic space cube. I have no freaking clue. And I tried watching some of these things. And it's, like, really horrible cut scenes. And it's like, holy crap, a 5-year-old could make a better YouTube video than this crap.
They effectively took an intern and said, hey, guess what you get to do? Jump cuts!
I don't think that's so much the case. I mean, honestly, in the early 90s, that was, you know, especially when you look at MTV short attention span theater type situations where that was the way they filmed things back then. And they said, you know, let's take this, you know, tired early mid 80s stuff and you know, make it Jiggy. Yeah, and that's...
Hey, Beavis, let's come back to MTV now in 2010 now that they have no other content.
Well, not to get too far off topic, but I think that's MTV's attempt to reintroduce actual music videos to their...
Yeah, yeah. Overall, and again, I really can't talk about the end of the game because obviously I'm still stuck on that stupid dinosaur, dragon sword looking Triptychon thing. I swear, when he turns to the side to do the tail attack, he looks just like Dragon Zord.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
I feel kind of bad for you that you know what Dragon Zord looks like, but. Yeah, we'll just leave.
What are you talking? Dude, I grew up on Power Rangers. Shut up. But overall, I really enjoyed the book. I enjoyed the continuity that gave us. Hopefully Transformers Prime will do it some sort of justice.
What do you guys think of the fact that there are no figures for this series?
For which series?
For Prime.
You know, go ahead, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I was going to say, that they'll come eventually.
I'm really surprised they didn't show off anything at the BotCon designers panel. This is going to be another one of those situations where you see the initial pictures, like from animated, right? And you say, I don't see how they're going to take this Prime and turn it into a truck and make that a toy. There's just no way in hell. And then when you see him, it's like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever, and I must own them all.
And you know, the funny thing is, animated Prime is probably, the Voyager class figure, is probably the best figure in that line.
Well, there's a lot of really good figures in that line.
Let me put it this way. That's my favorite figure in the line. How's that?
Okay.
Even though you forgot to pull his legs all the way down in the review.
There's a lot of figures I like. I like Lockdown. I like Blur. I like all of the activators. I think those are awesome. But the thing that I don't like about Prime is that it's essentially animated movie styles. And I don't like any of the movie styles. I'm just not a big fan.
This past week on Nerd News, I covered the Transformers Prime stuff from SDCC, and I showed them, Spada included, I posted the link to TFW with all the pictures from that panel of the Prime designs.
I had seen them as they were coming through, but yeah.
Okay. Well, and Spada had mentioned that, you know, you're talking about the toys. How can they make toys? How can they make alt modes out of those robot modes?
Or how can they make robot modes out of those alt modes? Because those things they're practically seamless.
Yeah.
But I was looking at the RC there, Mike, and are the wheels for that figure in the legs? Do you remember?
Which RC?
TF Prime RC.
I don't remember. I can try to look it up.
Because if they were, then that could very easily be a remold of animated Prowl.
Huh.
I'm not sure. Let me see if I can get the TFW thing up here. Say something. We don't need dead air.
Yeah, all I hear is you typing. We have to have you typing at least once during every episode.
He can edit this in post.
He won't. And we have to have at least one time saying, yeah, Mike's going to edit this out, because he won't. Yeah, if we ever start up the drinking game again, that'll be it. Cause,
yeah.
Well, yeah, you've effectively stopped saying, oh, I don't know. It used to be every time Mike said, I don't know, then you take a drink. And you could get pretty well sloshed by the end of let's say any random TFG1 episode.
Yeah.
TFG1 podcast.
That's pretty funny. We should start wrapping this up.
Okay.
I'm dog tired.
That's fine. Final thoughts on book versus game. Spada, which do you think is better
as far as
the story and the continuity goes?
The story and the continuity, I actually prefer the book more. I thought the book was just more coherently put together, and I really think it was just a better story. Now, obviously, I didn't get to shoot anything while reading the book, which is kind of a downer, but I enjoyed the game. I honestly, legitimately enjoyed the game, but story-wise, I think the book was better.
I agree.
See, I haven't actually read the entire book yet, but I can imagine that
there's
a lot more
story
involved. The game is pretty much...
Did you enjoy the story of the Wikipedia page or the game better?
Well, no. What I had read from the Wikipedia page, there's a lot of information there. I mean, it starts from the humble beginnings of Megatronus, who didn't have a name, and Orion Pax, to all the way at the end where they're escaping in the Ark and the Nemesis is chasing them. I mean, there's a lot of story there, and the game was pretty much one battle. It's okay. Yeah. Optimus is already a soldier. And he's out there fighting the good fight against Megatron's forces, and Megatron's got his Dark Energon, and it's like here's a battle, probably 24 to 48 hours of real time by the looks of it, in all. As opposed to this huge sweeping epic that the book portrays. Not to mention the fact that there's going to be a lot of. I don't want to say exposition, but yeah, it's a lot more dialogue and a lot more descriptions, and you're going to have a better feel for what's going on with all these characters in the book versus in the game. The dialogue is nice. You get to hear three characters at a time chat, mostly during battle, and you see some side things, like in the prison and, if you're in the base and the way people interact with the leaders, things like that. But again, it's a very short bit of time that you're dealing with, and the story's nice for 48 hour time span, but it's not going to be as all encompassing as the book would be. So I look forward to reading the book.
Yeah, in the game, does Trypticon have three modes?
No.
Okay, I don't like that. I don't like how his alt mode is an orbital gun, but in the book, he is this platform station weapon thing, and he turns into the dinosaur, obviously, and then he turns into the Nemesis. I did not see that coming, and I absolutely loved it out of the book.
That was one thing I was thinking about. I was like, where are they going to fit like the Nemesis in? And oh, it's Trypticon. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, in Transformers Animated, which they borrow heavily from, right? The Ark were not so much the Ark, because all the ships were the same, but the ship that they had was Omega Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's like, wow, I'm surprised they didn't just make Omega Supreme the Ark, as opposed to having Alpha Trion build it.
Yeah.
No, it's fine.
Well, you couldn't really fit the entirety of the population, or most of the population, inside Omega.
Yeah.
You could fit an endlessly spawning series of aerial bots, but not everything else.
Yeah. I got one last question, then we'll wrap. What do you guys think of the plot point of Energon comes from Primus and Dark Energon comes from Unicron?
I think it has potential.
I think it has potential, but it also kind of unnerves me because it's like they are seeding the idea.
They're foreshadowing a Unicron encounter,
Yeah, exactly. The Unicron...
But then you also have Unicron worshippers, like they had in the original comic book, the Simon Furman years.
Well, I think it's more of people are addicted to Unicron, not worshipping Unicron, because in the book they talked about Dark Energon as being more of the most, addictive thing ever.
It's crack.
Yeah. Well, honestly, like seriously, in the book, they make it out to be some sort of drug.
See, they didn't so much make it out to be that in the video game. I can see how you could do that, you know. And you'd have Megatron there in full on Freddy Krueger mode with hypodermic needles for fingers. Megatron says, "Let's get high."
Oh God, that's horrible.
That's not a fusion cannon on its arm. What is it? It's a really big needle.
It's a really big needle.
Why am I flashing to the scene in Armageddon where Will Patton goes, "Oh, gee, lady, I'm only here to drill." She holds up this large syringe. She goes, "Funny, so am I." All right, and on that note, I think we're going to end this special War for Cybertron book versus game episode of All Things Transformers. Thank you for joining us here on All Things Transformers. There's always get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. Join the forums, predaconempire.com/nexus. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. You can follow us on Twitter. Predacon Empire is the Twitter for ATTF. Mine is TFG1Mike. Spada, what is your Twitter?
I am at Balt Matrix. That's BALTMATRIX. You can also catch me at that name on YouTube.
Yes, and Michael?
I'm changing mine to Send Me a Puggle.
No, you better not.
My Twitter is PeconCTMichael.
Yes, become a fan on Facebook, search GeekCast Radio Network. Call the voicemail line. Yeah, I'm barely awake now. Call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name, 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of All Things Transformers and wish you'll join us next time. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with Michael. You go first.
I'm Michael Wilson.
And I'm Matt Spada saying, join the voicemail.
Yeah. Thank God Mike Dodd isn't on this, because holy crap, he would find a way to use that against me. Anyways, we will see you next time, folks. Michael Wilson.
Now you want to record
yes,
it.
Yes, am right. Michael Wilson, you told me to... What did you tell me about Transformers?
I said, no hating until you're done waiting. And the whole point there was, you know, you and Steve had immediately jumped on Transformers Prime and said, it's going to suck. It's going to suck. And I said, don't worry, it'll be great. The animation's going to be awesome, and the writing's going to be fantastic. And I said, no hating until you're done waiting. And after the footage and the pictures that came out of the San Diego Comic-Con, I can say within a 55% certainty that I'm done waiting, and I hate it.
You heard it here first, folks, on All Things Transformers. Pecan Court Michael has gone back on his word, and he has gone back on his advice, and he hates Transformers Prime.
And he has joined the voicemail.
Joined the voicemail. I'm not saying that I've gone back on my word. What I said was, wait until more concrete evidence comes out. We don't know anything about this. It could be awesome. And I've seen pictures. I've seen a preview. I'm not all that impressed.
My only problem with it was I was worried it was going to be a movie tie-in. And now that they've specifically come out and said that it's going to be War for Cybertron continuity, I love it.
But it's movie designs.
It's movie designs and animated designs mashed together.
You know what? It's going to be a War for Cybertron tie-in about as much as the video game was. Because I bet you money Ortsman and Kurtz didn't read that book. And I bet you money they haven't played the video game. The writing may be good because they're in charge, but it's not going to tie in.
I'm sorry. Even without Michael Bay, I seriously doubt Orsi and Kurtzman can write a good Transformers cartoon. They may be great at doing Alias because they wrote a few episodes of that, and they were awesome writing Star Trek. I'm sorry. I don't care. Even if, thank God Bay's not attached to it, but even if Bay wasn't attached to it, they still can't write Transformers fiction for shit.
We'll see. I have a feeling that the new cartoon will have a lot to do with the movie and little to do with War for Cybertron or the book.
Well, that sucks. And on that note, later on, folks.
Long before. war leads them on to victory. Life's their darkest hour, their one destiny. Truth has its moment and right always wins. Prepare for the fight, let the battle begin. Transformers, defenders of truth, robots who fight in disguise.
Survive. Transformers.